Welcome to CI, Confronting Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today. And we're live with this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues, coming to you from the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco. Welcome to today's edition. And before we get started, a little apology about my February 3rd program. I missed it. I was tied up in the hospital with pneumonia, and so I just wasn't able to make it out. But I hope you enjoyed the rerun of a program, and we're back with you and back on track now. And so today's program is kind of picking up the threads from one of my first programs where we talked about the inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in our communities of faith. So today is tea time. We're going to really focus on the tea a lot more today. And joining me is my associate, friend, and executive director of OPTIC, presently working on a facility in the Tri-Cities area of Washington State, the Reverend Dr. Dawn Woody. She is also the founder of OPTIC. We worked together for a long time in San Francisco. And Dawn, since the last time you were on the program, why don't you take a minute and give us a quick update on where you're at with the facility there in Kennewick.
Well, we've got furniture in the place now. We're laying carpet, just about halfway carpeted now, and we still have to do some painting. But I just got a call just this morning that next week we will be able to go get a moving van load of stuff that's been donated to us, cubicle walls and some cabinets and furniture and things that we'll be using to finish out the place. It's incredible how just all of a sudden everything is coming together.
Great. It's amazing how things work when you're on track and that plan comes together. And also joining us is Deanna Lane. She is a resident of Kennewick. She is, I guess for want of a better word, a client and a congregant up in the facility and the ministry up there in Washington State. And so welcome to the program, Deanna. Why don't you take a minute and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Lisa. You can call me Annie. I am in my 50s. I worked at Hanford. Before that, I was a school teacher. I am not in transition. I'm in limbo, like many of us who left our jobs before we transitioned. And now Dr. Woody is helping me to move forward.
Great. Well, I think So that was my experience when I transitioned in 1993. If I could have held on for another year or so, things might have been a little different, but probably not much different. Because of the lack of understanding in the wider world about transgender issues, and that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. Dawn, it's going to be kind of like going through the curriculum again.
Okay. Well, what would you like for me to talk about, Risha? I'll ask a question. We lost you for a few seconds there.
Okay, why don't we first let's get started about your experience in the acceptance in the church, in the faith community there at the River of Life Community Church.
Okay.
The MCC Church.
Yeah, I walked into this church here, on Easter Sunday last year. And when I was discussing with the pastor after church and just greeting her and, and introducing ourselves to her, she says, well, what brought you up this way? And I was telling her about OPTIC and the program ideas that we had for here. And she says, well, you need to see my facility. And she just took us upstairs and started showing us this incredible 2,400 square feet of space up here that we could just, do anything we wanted to with it. And that's how we got started. The community here is a wonderful mix. We've got, in fact, the church board has two trans people on the board of directors, which is rare in any, even in MCCs, to have that many, have that strong percentage in the congregation. But it's a mix of lesbian women, gay men, transgender people, couple of straight people in the church, children even. We've got a slew of children running around here. And it's just been an amazing thing here to work with these people and get to know them and be a part of them. And just recently, they've started talking to me about the idea of maybe even being an associate pastor here. So I'm really excited about that as well.
Yeah, it's quite an opportunity. I remember the early phone calls and emails we exchanged as you were beginning to get introduced up there. And Annie, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here a little bit, and feel free if you don't want to answer something to deflect it off. But what drew you to that church or to the ministry that Dawn is accomplishing up there?
I'd say fear. Honestly, Risha, I asked myself, would the Assembly of God Church accept me? And I thought, no. And would the Baptist Church accept me? And I thought, no. And this church was here. I came in the first time, and it was a wonderful experience. They've saved my life. It's a wonderful congregation, a wonderful place to come. I feel safe here. I feel welcomed here. And that's where I met Dr. Woody, and everybody has just made me feel at home here.
If you could say something to the people listening out there who represent all kinds of churches, all kinds of faith communities, all kinds of faith traditions, and you could just kind of have just a few seconds or a minute or two of their ear, what would you like to say to them about being able to welcome transgender people?
I think I would say that... Oh, that's not a problem. I think I would say that 30 years ago, if I had walked into any church, they would have loved me and welcomed me. For some reason, people respond well to me because I like people. I love social life. I love the church experience, and I like to be involved. And 20 years ago, if I had walked in, I would have been welcome almost anywhere that I went. Now, 1 year ago or 2 years ago, maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't. I don't feel like I would have many, many places. And I guess I would say, look beyond the male, look beyond the female, look beyond it. Look at the character and the personality of someone and ask yourself if this is the person that you would like to be associated with.
I think you bring up a great point, and it's a point that I encountered back in 93, or actually 91, when I began kind of the road to living full-time and making the transition. And my counselor had another client who was in a very conservative, large Assembly of God church in the Central Valley of California. And so we talked. They put us in touch with each other because we had similar backgrounds and both at Pentecostal churches. So because there was no denominational statement or position on this, her pastor just took it upon himself to study and pray and treat her as an individual and deal on that level, and was very accepting and open to her and had a great time. It wasn't until denominational positions and what I kind of refer as the political aspect of it, especially as it became associated with the broader lesbian, gay, and bisexual movement, that things started changing and becoming a little more restrictive and a little more, hostile to transgender people. So I think there was definitely a seed change somewhere back when they shifted from their own prayer and discernment and guidance to guidance from a denomination or administrative body. Don, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I kind of would agree with you on that, Risha. And I've seen it in the denomination that I came from. I was coming from a Southern Baptist background, and of course, having pastored in that background in that denomination for 30 plus years. You know, Risha, I actually was going through my computer the other day.
Yeah, we're cutting in and out there, Don.
Oh, okay. Is that any better? I don't know what's going on here. Are you hearing me now?
So we lost you there for a few seconds.
Okay.
We're kind of in and out. We got you.
You're out now.
BBS Radio.com.
And we're back live at the Leland Tea Company with this edition of CI Confronting the Issues. I have to apologize. We had a little technical glitch. The network has been moving to some new servers and adjusting to some new equipment. So I apologize for that. But we're back with you now. And Don, are you still there?
I am still here. Yes.
Okay, good. When I was disconnected and we had the technical trouble, I was asking you about your experience and thoughts about the shift from individual congregations considering a person individually who's transgender and making a decision versus the more political aspect of denominational statements and positions. So we sort of missed your reply to that.
Well, you know, having come out of the Southern Baptist background and having pastored there for, 30-something years, and Risha, I just figured out the other day that I've actually been preaching for 40 years now, which is kind of a scary amount of time. But, the Southern Baptist Church was always supposed to be totally autonomous locally. And, even in this, in the denomination, now they tend to be ruled by the powers that be in the denomination itself, and they're told how to run their churches, and that's just not good. It's not good anywhere. And whether it's a transgender person or, if there's a race issue, whatever it is, it's not good. They need to make decisions based on individuals, not based on denominational politics. I'm done with politics in the churches. I'm done with it.
Yeah, I think, too, that it's a big disservice when many of these local churches were reaching out to their denomination not for ruling but for guidance and help and discernment about an issue that they cared about because it was one of their sheep that was, concerned and possibly hurt or potentially hurt. So, I see in these earlier attempts so much pastoral care in it and kind of a betrayal of that by a political structure that began looking at that and more ruling rather than helping them discern, what the Spirit is saying to them.
Right.
And, not to harp on any other churches or anything like that, because I think we all can point fingers at every denomination and find strengths and weaknesses and places of improvement because they are inhabited by humans, like all institutions here on Earth. But I think another thing to bring up and that we do in the curriculum a lot is, what do transgender people bring to the table? What is it that they bring that might be unique, might not be, or might strengthen an existing viewpoint in a congregation? And I'll let you start off with that, Don, and then we'll let Annie, you can chime in as you want to or feel led to.
Okay. Well, one of the things that that I believe that the curriculum we use in our conferences, it teaches the congregation, the community there, to accept, based on an individual, that don't be closed-minded. Be open-minded enough to allow Spirit to work and move. And as far as what a trans person could bring into the congregation, is open-mindedness. I mean, now, those of us that have transitioned and are transitioning have lived a lifetime on the other side. We understand both points of view a little bit better and probably much better than many of the congregants in a church. So I think that it's very important for us to teach. And sometimes we can't teach by lecture or anything. We just have to teach by living. And I think that's the part that needs to get across to so many congregations. We'll allow this individual in and allow them to just work alongside you. Their children go to the same church or to the same school yours do. They shop in the same grocery stores you do. They drive down the same streets and pay the same taxes for those streets that you do. Allow them to just be themselves and to be and be open to their, you know, their gifts into the community.
Annie, do you have anything you want to add to that or express on that?
Well, Risha, I hadn't thought of that question before you ask it. And I listened to Dr. Woody, and I'm not sure that my transgender issues brings anything to the table. I think that as a man, someone brings something to the table through his character and his personality and his background and his experiences and his beliefs and values. And I think as a woman, someone also does. So the fact that I am a woman and I'm transgendered, I'm not sure there's anything special about me because of that. I think what's special about me, it comes from something within, something of character. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And I think what I was looking at are things like perspectives. For instance, the issue of Trinity or Triune God. Most of us who are transgender have struggled somewhere in our lives with duality. Even when we were living in our closeted life or in the past before transition or making moves towards transition, in my case, I call it the time when I was living a lie, there was this kind of sense of duality. I had this dual life. I was a man, and then I'd go off and indulge the feminine, but, there's that duality to it until I could kind of come into my own and express my true self and became, I think, much more integrated, a much more whole person. But it gave me a little different viewpoint on God than I had before.
You make a great point, Risha. I met a man a few weeks ago, and he said, "You really pull it off well." And I said, "What do I pull off well?" And he said, "The whole feminine thing." And I said, "Actually, the first part of my life when I was pretending to be a man, that's when I really pulled it off well." And he was. That duality that I think you get a certain, from the transgendered experience, you get a certain openness and acceptance of others that maybe other people don't have.
I went through my transition, if you will, several years ago in 1993. The world has changed a lot since then. It's become a lot more open. Transgender has become much more a wider discussed topic than it was in 1992 or 1993. But as we look at what they bring to the table and as we've discussed different congregations' views, both positive and negative, and recounted some of our experiences, one of the goals of this program is to get people to think about their values and how to live them out. And so if you had a few minutes to talk to the people out there and just talk to their church leaders, and if you could give them, say, two things to do, the top two on a list of things to do to be more open and welcoming, period. Whether it's transgender, lesbian, gay, handicap, whatever the issue may be, whatever the other group might be, what would you say to them, Dawn?
I would, you know, it's, I would tell them that, again, it's just, you look at each one individually. You don't take them as a group or as a label. You look at a person for who they are individually. It's that simple. As Annie just said, you know, we don't look good doing this. We're not just doing something. I told somebody the other day, don't try to pass, just be, just become. And I think really that's what it is for the church. Become a place that's open-minded. Become what the scripture really teaches you to be. To open your life and open your community to everyone, no matter what. And Risha, you've heard me say that 1,000 times in the conferences that we've done. And in preaching and messages where I've been. So, I believe that and feel that way.
Yep. Well, we're coming up. The clock is kind of catching up to us. We're getting close to our first break. And we take two breaks during the program. And as we come up here, this first break is going to be 4 minutes. And we're going to break away. And we will see you all back here in 4 minutes.
Vitaly, the new name in electronic music, presents his new album, Looking at the Stars. Check it out at www.vitalymusic.com and here at BBS Radio, your first choice for unconventional and original music.
If you're a divorced single parent, press 1 now. Goodbye. Welcome to the Church of Total. If you're gay or lesbian, press 2 now. Goodbye. Welcome to. If you're overweight, have a mullet, or anything polyester, press 3 now. Goodbye.
God doesn't filter people out, neither do we. the United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. The United Church of Christ, where God is still speaking.
If you have a bumper sticker on your car, question authority, or otherwise think for yourself, please hang up now and have a nice day.
The United Church of Christ. To find the congregation that's right for you, go to ucc.org.
And we're back live with this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues, coming to you live from the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco. Joining me today is the founder and executive director of Optic, presently setting up a facility in Kennewick, Washington, the Reverend Dr. Don Woody. And joining us is a member of that congregation, Deanna Lane, who is just talking to us, bringing a little bit of her experience with our community to light here for us, for your enlightenment and edification. And during the break, we were talking a lot about our experiences, and I was relating a story. When I transitioned, I was working for the federal government, for the United States Army, and I had my commander, who was a one-star general, and the whole staff in there. And Annie just made the comment to me about courage. And what I really wanted to relate about that was one of my staff people there had said that's the most courageous thing he'd ever seen. And I was at a point then where it wasn't courage at all. It was just desperation. I was at a point where if I did not change, I was going to die. And I was in my 40s. I knew it was late in life. I struggled with this since I could remember, since I was 3, 4, 5 years old. I went through all the, you know, struggles of if I just do this, it'll go away, and all that kind of stuff, and none of that worked. And so by the time I stood in front of that group, ready to become who actually I was created to be, it was not so much courage as it was sheer desperation. Mm-hmm. And I think, Dawn, as we've traveled around the country doing seminars, I think that's one of the things we find as a common experience more than anything else is that desperation sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. We see that often. People say, well, you know, and I've got another client right here in-house that told me the other day, she says, you know, I put this off, but I can't put it off anymore. I have to do it now. And we talk about this all the time with all over the country, but you reach that point of do or die, and you literally reach a point, and it happened to me, and it's happened to so many others, and we hear this daily, that you get to a point where you either transition or you just kill yourself, or you die somehow. You may not physically die, but you die inside.
Right.
You let yourself die off inside. And that's I think sometimes that's worse than a physical death. Because then you just have somebody that's just a shell.
So. Yeah, I definitely think so. And it's what it tells me for all of us out there, regardless of your issue, whether it's being transgender, whether it's gay, whether it's struggling with the substance abuse or whatever it might be, that the ability to be authentic, to be mm-hmm. really who you were created to be, is very difficult in this country. We do not make it easy for a country that has the rhetoric of saying,
right,
you know, be independent, be your own person. You know, you don't have to fit the mold and all of that. Every TV commercial, every print ad tells us to fit the mold, that we need to fit the mold. You know, we need to use the right mm-hmm. toothpaste, the right deodorant, the right shampoo, drive the right car, wear the right clothes to fit in. That authenticity is difficult to come by. And I think part of the resistance to it is people are confronted. If we acknowledge our own reality and accept it and take it on, you know, and assume it and appropriate it for ourselves, they are now challenged to face reality, which sometimes is not comfortable.
Right. Right.
God,
I think that's the biggest problem. Is it sometimes shakes their very foundations of their beliefs because they don't understand it, and I think it's a fear of more of not understanding something. They're fearful of what they don't know. I don't know that building, and it's dark in there, so I'm frightened to go in. The building's not that scary, but I think that has a lot to do with it. It's the fear of the unknown.
Part of it is their past experience, though. The past experience of this is a female and this is a male. This is what a female looks like and this is what a male looks like. And though I can be a female and be authentic as a female, if I don't look the way they think a female is supposed to look, they don't see me as authentic, even though I am.
Yeah, expectation and labeling because of expectation is such a huge part of our culture, especially around gender, because it starts even before you're born. When a woman's pregnant, one of the first questions asked is it a boy or is it a girl? Now, are we going to get a pink blanket or a blue blanket? And even today, in 2010, that's the dominant question. So it starts before you're ever born, this kind of movement to assign you into one of these two categories. And once you move into one, a whole series of expectations follows with that, from looks to demeanor to career choices to how you behave in social situations. It's really, really amazing.
And it's
exceptionally powerful. I had a woman that I was dating actually many years ago, and she'd been outed as a lesbian when she was in college, and she came to me one day. We'd broken up, but we were still friends, and we were out having lunch, and she was in tears. I said, "What's wrong?" And she said that she had she was going with a man and really in love with him, and all of her lesbian friends had deserted her. And what we finally kind of hashed out and concluded was she had one experience in college where she'd experimented with a woman, and so she became labeled. She was labeled as a lesbian, so she assumed the label. She adopted the lesbian uniform. She adopted the lesbian code of conduct. She acted that, and it wasn't until she was confronted with the situation where she really had to ponder and consider what does she really feel, what does she really respond to really decide for herself who she is, rather than live under the oppression of this label that obviously was not entirely correct.
Yeah.
And also, Risha, can she not love someone because they're a male, or can she not love someone because that person is a female? Is that taboo?
And we were talking here, and I was talking more specifically sexual attraction, but you're right, you know. And then there's the definition of love itself. Are we talking sexual encounter? Are we talking about a fellowship love? Are we talking about kind of almost brotherly, sisterly love? It's kind of a shame that in the English language we have this one word love, where other languages have more precise, breakdowns of love in different styles and expressions of love. And we're not quite that liberal in our language.
No.
Yeah. That is a problem a lot of times, because we can't differentiate so much. We just say love, and oh my God, suddenly it's a sexual thing, and it's not a love,
right.
It's a sexual thing at all. So, I agree.
And in my previous life, I had met a gay man in Florence, Italy, and he said, "I think why shouldn't everybody be able to love everybody?" And I said, "I believe they should. However, it's how do you express that love?" Now, back then, I was in denial and didn't understand, but I'd come to
understand that. Sorry. Well, as we look ahead and come up into kind of the second part of the program or second half of the program, and again, the focus here is to help people kind of go through their own belief systems and decide how they're going to respond to issues. There's a whole number of issues that transgender people bring with them about. There's the political aspects, there's society aspects like identity, the difficulty, and Dawn, you and I encountered this in traveling because of flying and Homeland Security identification papers. I can't go to Canada to visit my sister because I can't get a passport until I get an amended birth certificate after having more complete surgery and gone through a court process. So again, our culture in the legal aspects does not make it easy for a person to express their authentic self.
Right. It is tough. And it shouldn't be that tough. I mean, we are who we are. Just because some kind of legal document says that we're something else doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. Unfortunately, this day and age, it does because of political issues and political controls of recent years.
Fear. I mean, it's really a fear response. We've become since 9/11 a fearful nation.
Yeah.
And we can talk about our military power and all that kind of stuff, but we're basically a fearful nation. Most of these policies come out of fear. And, fear of another attack. I'm not saying the fear is totally unwarranted. I'm just saying it's fear. And I think I have to go back to the scripture that tells me that God did not give us the spirit of fear, but of power and a sound mind. Isn't it interesting that power and confidence is related to a sound mind?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think Paul is really interesting in his writing in that, but I just pick up that confidence that fear is something that in some cases is necessary. It keeps us from hurting ourselves in a fire or walking off the cliff, but it's not always the best place to make decisions from. And
Yet
it drives so much of it. But I want to get back to your facility in Kennewick, Dawn. You're doing some really exciting things up there. Annie, you brought up how conservative the community is. But, Dawn, we were talking during the break about how your support group has grown. And would you talk a little bit about that in this conservative community, how this support group that you sort of took over or assumed has grown?
Yeah, we just kind of assumed one that was already here. And I still make it very clear that this is not an optic support group. It's its own entity. That's part of the Diversity Pride Center overall here on this facility. River of Life Metropolitan Community Church owns what used to be an old motel, and they've turned one end of it into a church sanctuary. Then what was the restaurant and club for the motel is now their big meeting hall called Getman Hall, and Getman Hall has become a place that we're calling now Diversity Pride Center. And the Diversity Pride Center has this group called Tri-City Trans, this support group. And when I first came here, they were meeting, every other week, or like the first and third weeks of the month. And as the group started growing, they wanted to meet more often. And what was originally just, general conversation among the group and a social time for them, among the four or five people that were getting together, has become something that really gets into some deep conversations now on specific subjects, everything from sexuality to how do we protect ourselves from predators to, what are issues as individuals begin transition. And so it's become a very deep and profound meeting space for now. We're running on the average 15 people each week. Groups actually, these individuals range in age from 18 years old to, you know, us that are in our late 50s. And it's quite an interesting mix of people. And there's ones that are just starting transition all the way to ones that have transitioned and have been, been post-op for 20 years or more. And it's a real strong, close-knit group. Our problem is, again, still reaching out to the community. We know of many, many that are out there in the community that are still frightened to step out in public. And we found that even among our group when we did Transgender Day of Remembrance, some of our members in the group says, well, you know, I'll be there at the memorial service, but I don't want to participate in the service because I have to get on a bus and ride home. And what if somebody saw me on in the media, report, and then they catch me because I'm trans, because I'm riding their bus. So we have to, I'm having to learn a whole different direction with this group up here, because I came out in San Francisco, and San Francisco is out 100%, and nobody cares. But here, it's still very important. Annie, you can address this even more than I can.
Well, I was the one. There might have been others, but Dr. Woody's talking about me. I was the one who didn't want to be in front of the cameras on the Day of Remembrance, and I regret that still. But honestly, you know, there was a certain amount of fear, and it really wasn't fear for physical harm. It was fear of psychological harm. It was fear of people that I knew finding out and not accepting me, which is irrelevant anyway because they're not in my life anymore.
Do you feel, since you've begun the steps to transition, or however you want to define this stage you're at in your life, do you find a certain relief that you made the decision to do that, or a certain kind of, not that all your problems are gone, but, you know, wow, okay, I've taken that first step, kind of that relief, I guess, is the best word.
Oh, it's an amazing thing, Risha, and you know what I'm talking about when I say that there's a sense of just calmness, because before, okay, I've been 24/7 pretty much as a female for the last year, just very few times, and I mean, that doesn't mean, you know, short skirt and a low-cut top. I mean, you know, sometimes girls wear sweatpants and a sweatshirt. But
that's right.
But I've been a female and have been living as a female for the last year. And honestly, there's still a sense of hopelessness. Like I said before, I don't feel like I'm in transition. I feel like I'm in limbo. Because if I had the finances, and if I were in a program, and there's a certain process to transition. And if you're not really into that yet, you're just waiting until that happens. Maybe it will happen for me, and maybe it won't happen for me. But at least I'm who I am right now.
Do you feel in this limbo and kind of this, because I know I feel this way, sometimes in kind of this, I call it the in-between land. I'm female, I understand that, I understand my femininity, and am in a process of learning how to define that and express it in my terms, not society's terms, but there's still a sense where I feel in between, like where I'm not quite at the end of the road, but I'm obviously past the starting point. I'm in this in-between place that I like you calling that limbo, because it often feels like limbo to me. And not the fun limbo of the Caribbean either.
Right. You talked about expectations and what we come to the table with. Well, you know, we all have those. And
right.
Like Dr. Dawn loves her nails. She loves those nails. It's important to her to have her nails done. Now, I'm not like
that's
that,
right.
But there are things that I like that I associate with my femininity. And if I don't have those things, It hurts me. It depresses me.
When I was responding to disasters, right after I transitioned, my thing was a certain degree of cosmetics and my espresso machine. I had a little tiny portable one, and that had to come with me. And I wasn't really comfortable or settled until that stuff was with me. And even in Soviet Armenia, after the earthquake there, I was able to, I gave some cosmetics to one of the women, and if I could have brought her home, I would have. But she was just this incredible old woman who brought us food and stuff on the rubble piles. Now, mind you, it's 15 below zero out there. It was not a fun day. But the clock is catching up with us again, and so we're going to take a kind of a shorter break this time. We're only going to take about a two-minute break. And so I'll see you back here, Seth, my engineer. We're cutting the break down to 2 minutes instead of four because I wasn't watching the clock. That's my fault. And so we'll see you all back here in 2 minutes.
Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
And we're back live with this edition of CI Confronting the Issues, coming to you live from the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco. And today it's been tea time. We've been talking about the tea or transgender part of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And as we're coming up at the end of this break, it's closer to the close of the program. And so we're going to come up with some closing thoughts. And Don, really quickly, do you have some closing thoughts?
I do. We need help here. We need, with any nonprofit program, we need financial support. Bills that have to be paid. Here in the Northwest, it gets cold in the wintertime, and electric bills and heating bills go way up. We had a heating bill that was almost $600 for the month of December. So funding is always important. We need people that are willing to let it be known out there that we're available and that we will take people from across the country if they can get them here. We will take them in and we will assist them and work with them and counsel with them and guide them as they transition. And it doesn't have to be necessarily male to female. It can be female to male as well, because we do have resources for that on the as well. Our website, well, we don't have a website, but our email address for OPTIC here, and OPTIC, by the way, stands for Outreach Program for Transgenders in Crisis, but our email address is optic.center@yahoo.com. And that's checked daily. And we would be glad to work with you in any way you would like as far as making donations or supporting us in some manner. And also, always prayers are available as, are welcomed as well. Thank you, Risha, for allowing us to be on here today.
Annie, do you have any last thoughts here?
I don't really, Risha, other than the fact that this has been a lifesaver for me. This is a community that's a little bit closed-minded, or I shouldn't have said that. I don't know the term for it, but it's a conservative community. And there are needs here, and it's a lot easier to raise money for the children's hospital than it is for someone who's having an identity gender issue. And we appreciate all the help that we have gotten and that we will continue to get from you guys in San Francisco and Seattle and Portland and everywhere. Thank you.
Well, it is about personal stories and people's lives. It's not just a class of people. It's people's lives here and people's lives at stake while they want to be authentic, who they were created to be, which I believe is the purpose that Jesus came to earth, the purpose when he said, I've come to give them life and life more abundantly, to give them a fulfilled life, to be who God created them to be. And so I urge any of you out there who might be moved to support this work, because it's really a resource for communities around the country to be able to support this facility. It's actually a landmark facility in what it's able to provide for a transgender, both female to male and male to female clients. And so I just really urge you to do that, and I will post the email and some contact information on the program's website, because coming up we have some good programs. Another group that doesn't get thought of much around communities that we're going to have a program on St. Paddy's Day is about accessibility to places of worship. And for those of us with walkers and wheelchairs, only less than 20% of our worship sites are accessible. And that doesn't say much for us as a caring community. That's not a very good legacy for us. So we're going to talk about accessibility to places of worship in conjunction with a conference that will be held here at the Pacific School of Religion on that same topic. I want to thank my guests, Dawn and Annie. I want to thank you for taking
You're
time
welcome.
Out of your afternoon and being with
You're
me
welcome.
Today.
Thank you. Thank you, Marisa, for allowing us.
I want to thank Seth and Dawn, my engineers, Dawn, D-O-N, at the BBS Radio, and really want to thank them for carrying this program and for the engineering that they have and that they provide to keep us on the air and teaching me how to be an internet radio host and get me out of all of those nasty broadcast habits like paying too much attention to a clock. And to supporters of this program, John Alex Lowell, Dan Diaz, all are regular supporters of this program who help keep it on the air, and I really appreciate them because this program works on that too. I don't have commercial sponsors. I don't have big corporate sponsors. This really depends on listeners and listener support. And, of course, my thanks to Will, the owner of the Leland Tea Company, for a wonderful place to host the program where he takes great care of us with wonderful tea and some of the best baked goods in the city. And certainly he spoiled me with his Madeleines. I can't have a Madeleine from anywhere else now. And so with that, the clock is caught up, and we are through for this edition. So we will see you all in 2 weeks with another edition of CI. You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.myciradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.